How's it going, everybody? We're back for another episode of Pitching to Contact. Today we have another special guest for you guys. It's Peyton Trawick, one of the regional managers for the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network. How's it going, Peyton?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing great, dude. I actually just got back from grocery shopping. I tried to rush back here, and the funny thing I noticed while grocery shopping, I went with my buddy, and he was with his girlfriend. Every time you go grocery shopping and there's a girl there, she always has like a grocery list. And I find that really interesting because us guys, whenever we go grocery shopping, everything's off the dome.
Yep, we just, yep, it's amazing.
We see something, everything's off the dome. You see something, you get it. Anyways, I'm also joined by my co-host as always, Pete. How's it going, man?
I'm doing great, Richard. Just wonderful, man. Happy to be here. Great.
Are you watching the Houston game right now, guys?
I just got back from my epistemology class, so no, I am not. Peyton, how about you, man?
I usually watch it on my computer because my PlayStation doesn't have the Watch TBS app, so I currently am not, but I was before we hopped on here.
Oh, geez, so I just ruined your night.
Yeah, kind of, being a Red Sox fan and all, but you know, it's okay. We'll get through it.
I am so sorry. But
know that.
Do what?
I didn't even know you were a Red Sox fan.
Yeah, I am. Whenever I was growing up, on Sundays and
Saturdays
were the only time I could watch baseball because I've obviously had a bedtime. So I TBS always carry the Sox game on Sundays, so it just kind of evolved from that.
I got you.
There we go. You learn something new every day. Well, Payne, I got the Astros game going on the side of my screen, so I'll keep you updated if anything big happens.
Please do.
But anyways, apart from being a regional manager in the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network, you also do some stuff for the University of Central Arkansas. Can you just kind of talk about what you do there and what your role is with the team?
Yeah, so my role is a student assistant, a little bit different than a student manager would be, because I know Pete is a student manager at Bowling Green. My role is a little bit different. What I do is I kind of handle just help running practice stuff. I can't technically lead like any drills or anything like that per NCAA regulations, but I help out with practice. I help out with, you know, data, you know, all that kind of stuff. So my role, I wouldn't say is huge, but it's definitely vital for what we're trying to accomplish. Right. So it's not anything too in-depth right now with it being still in the off-season. But.
Yeah. So, Peyton, how did you end up with that position? What got you there?
Well, this summer I was sitting around. I was obviously working for CBSN still. And, you know, one thing, I was really trying to build my resume. And so I reached out to them initially about any open positions, and I kind of gave them my background, and I guess they were – relatively impressed with everything I had done up to this point. So instead of me being a manager and just kind of, or, you know, just helping out with practice or doing laundry, all that kind of fun stuff, I get to kind of be more hands-on.
Isn't that what Pete gets to do?
Yep, that's Pete. What I get to do. I've already surpassed the level of laundry boy. So, yeah. So sorry, other student managers out there. I know that's a struggle, but, yeah, Peyton and I are living the high life over here of what we can kind of do, being not like student managers per se, but being student assistants. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Whenever I initially contacted them, I was kind of worried because, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to sound all high and mighty, but with Justin keeps us pretty busy with everything with the company. So I didn't want to have to spend my free time doing laundry. That was kind of the only thing I was worried about.
Oh, yeah, dude. I know how you feel there. Unfortunately, well, not necessarily unfortunately, but like when I was a freshman, when I originally reached out to the baseball team, I didn't have any experience behind me. I had not yet scouted for the Sydney Blue Sox and done all this data stuff and had my major in data science and have a really well thought out statistical background. Mm-hmm. I didn't even get a response from the coach. I got a response from the equipment manager. That's how that was. I got a response from them, and they were like, hey, do you want to go do laundry for us? And so I kind of had to work my way up there. But, Peyton, good for you, man.
Yeah, kudos to
you. And you didn't mix your whites with your colors, right? Because
oh, no. That's a big no-no.
That's a big no-no because it's not like you're washing your own clothes. You're washing someone else's clothes, and you better get it done correct.
Oh yeah. That's definitely a motto you got to live by. You got to just do everything that you do and you put in front of you, you got to do it correctly and with great effort. But in general though, like, yeah, I wish that I had like the washing machines and the powders and detergents and all that stuff that they all use for their uniforms just for my clothes, because like, oh my God, this stuff is like some like industrial level stuff. Like this ain't no Tide Pod. This is like really legit stuff. I'm just like, I sit there and I'm like, I wish I had that for my laundry. That would be so great.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you, man. And yeah, since we're on this topic, Peyton, how does like the recruitment? I've never actually played pro ball. College ball. I did play in high school and I kind of had some experience with the whole recruitment process. But how do you guys over at UCA go about recruitment?
I can't really speak being this early on to much how UCA does it, just because we're still really early on in the year. But if I were to provide like any kind of, philosophy or anything like that, something that I personally think is a good rule of thumb to follow is just finding a culture. Cause I mean, every head coach is different. You know, ours, Coach Gum, Alan Gum, he's very offensive minded, just to say the least. I mean, the hitter serve is a really big priority to him. He loves to score runs. You know, everything he says at practice, you want to save runs, you want to create runs. And then that's kind of like the philosophy he's going by this year in particular. So once you have a philosophy, you want to kind of recruit players and find players that can fit that bill, because if you have an environment and a philosophy established, and showing your players how you're going to play the game, that's where it starts. You know, if you can have players that buy into that, that's going to serve you, really well down the road.
Yeah. For sure.
I was going to tag off a little bit on that from what Peyton said, because I've kind of been at Bowling Green for a few years, and I think I can definitely speak a little bit to the recruitment process here at BG and definitely say that I think money has a big part of it, especially coming from a smaller D1 school. You don't just have the money to just go full scholarship here, you. So it definitely comes down to little things like what Peyton talked about with culture and what you're looking for out of a guy, culture-wise, makeup-wise. What does this guy bring here? Especially from a lower D1 perspective, we also don't necessarily get the cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. So what we kind of have to do is we have to like pick out the very like – I like to call them the nitty-gritty projectable pieces, because it's like you kind of have to say, all right, well – this guy, he's talented, but he's not too talented, but we can realistically get this guy, but he's extremely projectable into what we want him to be culture-wise, player-wise, and just overall as a human-wise in our system or our program. So, that's to me, that's definitely what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because both of you guys are at D1 schools, just to comment on the actual kids who are looking at playing college ball, I feel like with D1 schools especially, everybody wants to go D1. They might be D2 guys, D3 guys, NAIA guys, but D1 is always that dream. So especially when you get higher up the D1 ladder, this is something that kids really want to do, and they don't realize how difficult it is to get to that level. Like 82, 84 with no command isn't going to get you to a D1 school, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. One thing I do want to comment on that, though, is that I don't want to word this incorrectly, but truthfully, at least in my opinion, the term D1 sometimes gets a little overrated to me, because to me as a player, if you think about it from a development standpoint, like I know a lot of these players that are young and that are coached to believe certain things don't necessarily know better, but truthfully, as a player, I would rather go to a D2 powerhouse and know I'm going to get developed really well there and have a better chance of getting drafted professionally than say go to a smaller D1 school where they don't win a lot of games, they don't have a lot of money projectability going forward, and they just have a bad overall development culture, and it's not going to get me anywhere, rather than the fact that other than I get to say I played Division I baseball. And I'm sure Peyton would agree 100% to that.
Yeah, I've seen some D1 players that there's a couple schools in the Southeast region in particular that I think the NAI team across town for me could beat them. When I say that, I mean like they would probably hang 20 on them. Like there's some bad programs out there, and that's not to knock them, but I mean they're there are some schools that just don't treat baseball as a priority. And, you know, and I get it. Every school has a different sport. It's going to be a little bit, you know, higher priority, you know, just because of, you know, past history and things like that. But, I mean, it should never be to a point where you're getting in non-conference play, getting 25 runs hung on you by a mid-major, you know, or anything like that. And I don't want to throw schools out there, but there are some out there, and it's hard to watch because there will be a couple good ball players that will go there. And just because, you know, it's their best offer, and then they don't get developed, you know, or anything like that. So it's a hard thing to realize whenever you're being recruited, you know, that though some of those like a JUCO, you know, sometimes that's the best route to go, and not for you, but for your development.
Yeah. And just touching on that JUCO point, when they think D1, they think Alabama, they think Kentucky, they think College World Series, you're on TV, every girl wants to sleep with you, and you think you're going to go to college and you're going to be the hotshot on campus. But another thing that kids just fail to consider is one, education. What are they trying to do after school, right? Do they want to develop? Are they smaller and just want to get more playing time? Because you go to D1, you don't want to be redshirted right off the bat. The key for you is if you have a plan in mind, like do you need development? Maybe a JUCO route is the best thing for you, because JUCO, it's tough competition. They're going to develop you and you're going to play more, right? And I mean, there's in my mind, if you're a baseball player and you're relatively good, I feel like there's a spot for you somewhere, whether it's D1, D2, D3, JUCO, whatever. And I think kids have to prioritize fit as opposed to, like, this is the sexy name. This is where I want to play because everyone's going to know my name. And in the long run, I'm sure a lot of kids kind of ruin their future potential by going to the wrong spot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, 100%. One thing that I also don't think that a lot of these players realize is that I think everybody has the, I like to call it, illusion of grandeur. Mm-hmm. That they're going to magically somehow, because they went to a D1 program or something, their best offer, per se, that's going to make them go pro. Now, once again, if we're talking about a top-class kid and we're talking the difference between LSU, University of Iowa, and Clemson, that's a different story than saying, would I rather go to a D2 powerhouse, Bowling Green State University, or some JUCO in the Midwest that nobody's ever heard of. Like, to me, like, one thing that I think a lot of players don't understand is that a lot of them need to realize that also they're not going to have – they're probably not going to have a career after college. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about, like, you know, the D1 label or that. Like you said, it's about fit. Like, what's going to develop me the best, but also educationally. A lot of coaches in college baseball, at least from what I have seen, not just here, but just in other programs as well, I think there's this slight epidemic with that. People prioritize, they don't come to play school, they come to play baseball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then what happens is 3-4 years down the road, you graduate, you don't graduate, you lose your eligibility, and you're still in college for that 5th, 6th year, finishing up some pushover degree that you never really even thought about, like some pushover degree that isn't going to help you really get anywhere because you were so concentrated on trying to play baseball for 4 years. And it just, to me, sometimes it just kind of makes me scratch my head a little bit, because I'm just like, where do you go from there now? Like, why didn't you plan for your other half of your life?
Every school has those kids. Even the top of the line schools. I mean, you have guys that go, they know they're only going to be there 3 years. They'll do what they can to get by in class. Like, I know I'm not going to say names, but I know for a fact of one kid that played in the SEC last year, that his girlfriend literally did all of his schoolwork, and, you know, and he ended up getting
attaboy.
Yeah. And I'm being serious. Like, this isn't made up. I would drop a name, but I'm too close to the, to who it is for me to be doing that. But,
don't get fired.
Yeah. Well, it's not in my school, luckily. So, but, you know, it's stuff like that. Like, I get that, you know, some guys, you know, if you have a big arm and it plays at the next level, you're going to get a chance. But that degree, it's meaningful, you know. I just don't understand how guys can kind of push school off to the side, you know, knowing that, you know, in a blink of an eye, you know, baseball's gone and you have no money.
Yeah. And also at the same time, like, to me, it sometimes gets a little shocking that like any coach that you talk to in an interview about academics and all that kind of stuff, they'll tell you basically the same thing, which is along the lines of, oh, well, our team has an accumulative 3.0 GPA and we're really good. And obviously we want the degree first. These guys don't necessarily care about the degree first. I know firsthand that, like, they say that degree first. No, they care about winning first.
You think Nick Saban's degree first?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. You think they care about that? No, they care about winning.
Because that saves their job. And just kind of to shift their focus a little bit, but to stay on the topic of college and recruiting, Pete, you can probably speak more on this because you've been with BG for a couple of years now. But you guys have like your own camps, right? You have a kind of showcase type of camps where you can find those guys. Is that really the main way that schools in the States find their players?
I think it also depends on like region. But definitely say in like the Midwest for sure, especially like I kind of touched on earlier in the podcast, being a lower D1 school where maybe baseball isn't necessarily the number one priority for the athletic department. We don't get a obnoxious amount of funding that we can just get on planes and go to California, Texas, Arkansas, and all these other places whenever we feel like. We definitely rely on those kind of showcases to kind of just gather people from the Midwest and other certain areas too. Like we had guys, like as Richard would know, we had guys from Canada there. We've had guys from Alaska come out to these showcases before. But yeah, no, we definitely value those because not only does the money that parents pay for these kids to play in showcases help pay for certain things for us, but at the same time, it's also a really good way for us to kind of gauge talent and even recruit a lot. Like we get a lot of our recruits from that too. So yeah, absolutely.
And showcases is really something that's always been interesting to me because there's always different type of players. There's showcase guys, and then there are guys who are just gamers, right? You're not going to see them do anything really special in a showcase, but then you go out and watch them in game. You're like, okay, this guy's a ball player. But on the flip side, something that really frustrates me because I've worked at many showcases in my life already. I've done some prep baseball report stuff for a few years now. I've noticed that a lot of players just, Roberto Osuna just gave up a grand slam.
Ooh, yikes.
Ooh, 8-2. Boston just blew this game open.
And on to Alex Bregman.
Oh, man. I'm shedding a tear for Alex Bregman right now.
Baby.
But just back on topic, one thing that really frustrates me about showcases is kids try to be who they're not at showcases. And really, what's going to get you from level to level is your carrying tool. So if your carrying tool is your speed and you're on a 6'3", 6'4", show it out. You hit a ball on the ground in your simulated game in a showcase, run it out every single time because your bat's not the carrying tool. Your carrying tool is your speed. If you run a 6'4", I don't want you trying to get the ball in the air, right? I want to see you get the ball on the ground and flash a really nice home to first time. And that's something, obviously, kids are young. They're 16, 17 at these showcases. But I don't want to see you guys hit it swinging for the fences. I really enjoy seeing the kids who just understand the game, have a feel for the game, and have a feel for their own game and just try to play within themselves because that's what's going to get you to the next level. It's like if you're a power guy, I want you to have the loudest BP in the world. Your first round, pull side, second round, show off some oppo power. And then third round, just try to get second deckers, right? Mm-hmm. That's a power guy. If you're a speed guy, just show that out, right? I don't want to see you hit the ball in the air and try to go for triple for like extra base knocks that way. You hit a single, push it. Try to go to second, you know? And that's something that just watching showcases for a while that's really frustrated me, especially the speed guys who try to be something they're not.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't even understand the countless times that I've made the Willie Mays Hayes joke to other coaches and that kind of stuff at showcases. You know, like how in the part in the movie where he comes up to BP, we have this wicked fast guy and he just starts popping everything up and just, you know, like just straight up trying to be something he's not. Like, I've like in general, like I completely wholeheartedly agree. One thing to kind of touch on what you're saying, Richard, in general, though, like one thing that I think we definitely both value is just players who understand who they are and understand the game. So like, for example, what like you were kind of talking about, Richard, one thing that makes me really excited about a player who say is really fast, say like a Max Schumann, for example, if he's at a showcase, I'm not there to see Max Schumann hit fly balls. I'm there to see Max Schumann hit balls hard on the ground or hard on a line. And I want to see him get on base and I want to see him run the bases. I want to see him get his secondary leads. I want to see what he does to read pitchers, how he reads their stride steps, how he times them the home plate, how he gets those secondary leads, how he steals bases, all that kind of stuff, how he makes his turns around bases, all that fun stuff. I don't like if he's got power and he can show it off. Good, good for him. But if he definitely doesn't, then no. You need to emphasize the tools that you have. And that's the biggest, one of the biggest things in showcases that we see all the time is just these ultra talented kids who just don't truly understand what they are as a player. Mm-hmm. And then they just overdo it and then they play like crap and then they wonder why they don't get a phone call.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Yeah. And just touching back on that point, it's really tough, obviously, being at a showcase because first, you have your 60s, and you have your throwing, you have your pop catcher pop times, and you have BP. And you, as obviously as a kid, you always want to show out at every single point of the showcase. But like you talked about, if your tool is speed, show off your burners during the 60, and just try to be yourself in BP. Like if you're not a big power guy, don't make sure your swing doesn't get too long in BP and you just like look horrible because you're trying to hit bombs. We know that's not you. Like it might sound really, really shitty, but when BP's on, I'm not even watching you. I don't really care. I'll take a look at your swing if it's nice and yeah, that's a plus, but I'm looking at the power guys because that's their show. Like exactly. you got to kind of move over, and I'm sure Peyton can also speak on that because I mean, you do your thing out there too.
Yeah. And one thing I really love about our coaching staff is that they really try to let, you know, players be themselves. You know, granted, we have certain things we want to do at the plate in terms of approach and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But our coaches really let players be themselves, you know, especially our pitching coach. He, you know, with the pitchers, not everybody's going to be a power guy. You know, some guys are, you know, I mean, we have obviously good velo. But, you know, not everybody is going to come right at you with a blow-away fastball. You know, and it's the same thing with our hitters. You know, we don't have a lot of big home run guys. Mm-hmm. You know, and we rely on, you know, we're going to rely a lot of this year on balls in the gap, you know, being able to take the extra base, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, having feel for who you are as a player. You know, and those guys who know who they are and can make it work for them are the ones that are going to play every day.
Yeah,
you know, because those are going to be your most productive guys. You know, if you have a guy who, you know, can't figure out who he is at the plate, you know, he's not going to perform in a ball game. If you have a guy who's 5'9", 170, and he's trying to, you know, yank the ball at the left field wall every AB, I mean, that's just not going to work.
Yeah, for sure. And absolutely. But on the flip side, for all just getting back to the showcase stuff, obviously a lot of kids try to not play within themselves and try to be something they're not. But as a scout, say you're watching a kid and you're watching him play for his travel team. Yeah, he might be the best guy there, but it's important as a scout to just not jump to conclusions. You got to be able to compare him to everyone else who's good in the city, good in the province, good in the country. And that's how you kind of, that's where all the prep work is done before the draft. So say you find a guy on the travel team and you're like, this guy's the best kid on the travel team. But he's not playing against good players. He goes to a provincial showcase. Now you're comparing him against the best in the province. And I think that's really important as a scout. And then you have like the PG All-American Classic. Then you're comparing him against the best kids in the world. And that's when you kind of want to see how these guys hang. Like, for example, I'm watching this is something that a scout taught me, actually. I'm watching the Astros game right now. Justin Verlander is one of the best pitchers in baseball. How do I know? Because I've seen a lot of MLB games, and he's one of the best guys there, right? Same thing on the scouting side. You see a kid on a travel team, he's the best kid there, but how does he compare to everyone in the province? How does he compare to everyone in the country?
Right.
And I think that's something that showcases really, really help, because that's where the best of the best are most usually. And that's when guys can really separate themselves. And the scouts, like Pete, we talked about Jake Wilson a little bit ago. We talk about Jake Wilson all the time. When I watched him at a pro day a couple years ago, I don't remember everything that happened at a pro day, but when I saw Jake Wilson throw from right field, it stands out. And it's been 3 years since pro day, and I remember that.
Yeah.
So, and that's what ball players have to do, and that's what scouts remember.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, and not just to kind of put a little bow and just wrap that whole topic up in general, like, I think as a scout, the most projectable thing that you can look at, not just as a coach from a coach's perspective, but as a scout from a scouting perspective, is that the most projectable thing that we can find other than tools is your own understanding of who you are. Mm-hmm. Because the people who are understanding the most of what their abilities are and how they know how to capitalize on it are the people who turn out to be the most successful in this game.
Yeah,
no, for sure.
To bounce off of that, you know, whenever I'm interviewing scouts for my region, even now, I always ask them, you know, what is your, whenever you're evaluating a hitter, you know, what kind of approach do you look for and why? And, you know, the most common answers I get, you know, is I love power. I love power because, you know, you look around at Major League Baseball, you know, you're looking at a lot of home runs, and then on the pitching side, you're looking at a lot of spin rate and you get swing and misses. You know, that's just how it goes.
Yeah. But on the flip side, like, these kids are going to be watching high school guys and college guys. They're hitting like 5-6 home runs a year. What, are you going to slap a 50 power grade?
Yeah, and that's what I was about to get at. You know, you can't just you know, look for power in every single player. That's what I was trying to get at. You look around and, you know, you look at this 5'5 kid that's a sophomore in high school. Yeah, he's not going to be your power guy. I mean, you have to find people who play the game the way that fits them and do it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because not everybody is the same player. I mean, do you think that freaking D. Gordon plays like Giancarlo Stanton? No. There's two completely polar opposites. You know, you can't try to, you know, make one guy fit, you know, a specific brand of baseball when it's just not there, you know.
On the flip side of that, though, that's not to say that they can't develop that. But once again, like look at it from a bigger D1 perspective. Like, say you're Texas A&M or say you're a big power school like that. You have to go through the recruiting process that with guys who are like 13, 14 years old. You're looking at them like, honestly, in my opinion, way too early, but you don't have a choice as one of those big schools and saying, is this guy going to turn into this? This guy going to turn into that? Nobody's going to say that they can't eventually develop power. Look at like D.D. Gregorius, for example. Like when he came up to the big leagues, everybody thought he was a glove first shortstop. And now we look at him now and this guy's hitting 30 home runs a year.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's not to say that they can't develop that power. But the only reason why these people become so good is because they already understand who they are. They understand what their strengths and weaknesses are. They understand how to play to their strengths. And then they just maximize their weaknesses and just turn those into strengths as well. That's the real point I'm trying to get at, is that the people, why they're the most projectable is because they understand what their strengths are versus their weaknesses, and they know how to play to their strengths while also strengthening their weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think another big thing with scouting is a lot of guys tend to mistake what a power hitter is and what a hitter with power is.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a huge difference. Like, you see a guy like Prince Fielder, or Giancarlo Stanton's a line drive guy. He just hits liners out of the park. Ryan Howard, right? That's a power hitter. He's not a hitter who hits for power. But then you look at a guy like Jose Altuve, he's a hitter who can hit for power. And that's something that a lot of scouts don't really understand. And it gets really challenging when you're starting to scout high school kids and college kids. And that's kind of like what I said earlier. If you're a power guy and you're in BP, I want to see you hit dingers, pull side in the first round, away in the second round, and then third round, just have a ton of fun and just hit it as far as you can, right? And I mean, I've scouted in Canada for a few years, and I got to see Josh Naylor swing. That's Noah Naylor's older brother. He's with the San Diego Padres. And that's a power dude right there. Like, you watch his BP at the Rogers Center, and he's hitting balls to the second deck. That's a power guy. a power guy isn't a dude who hits a couple of balls like over the bullpen wall, right? Yeah. And that's something that scouts really, really mess up a lot of times. And of course, when it comes to like Peyton, you say a lot of the people who apply for your region say they're looking for a kid with power, but power is something that could develop over time. Like there's a kid right now in Ontario, Owen Cassie, he's 15 and he's committed to Kentucky. And he's a skinny kid, long, lanky. He has a great frame. And right now he hits lasers. And you can just see the power is going to come eventually when he grows into his frame and just gets stronger. You're not going to see a guy at this age hit 20, 30 bombs.
Yeah,
you know? That's not going to happen. And that's really something that I think that's an important thing that scouts have to understand. And that's where projectability comes into things.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And, you know, and just to kind of like shift into my, like into my region in particular, whenever I initially took over back in March, you know, I had to really completely shift the way the whole region thought in terms of scouting. Cause before, you know, a lot of people just didn't really in our region that we had at the time, you know, they just didn't understand, you know, what it really meant to scout, because you could tell when you're reading the reports, it's like, okay, you know, this guy does this good, and he does this really well. Okay, fine. And then you have on the complete other end of the spectrum, you would have this kind of misconception of some of the guys thinking that it's more of just breaking down what they do wrong. Mm-hmm. That's not really it either. You have to find, you know, what they do well now, where it develops, you know, what their weaknesses are, you know, what can they do to change it? Can it change, you know? And a lot of things, one thing I really told one of my scouts, you know, back in June, whenever, and this was one of the returners, whenever we were talking about stuff he needed to improve on, I told him, I said, it's okay to break people down. And, you know, sometimes it's going to feel basically like body shaming some guys, but, you know, you have to be very blunt in your reports. You know, if some guy, like if he can't hit, and then that's the way you see it right now, but there's room for adjustment, put it in there. If he plays first base and it's like the freaking moon to him, who cares? I mean, like, put it in there. Let him know. Because you want to be able to, you know, as a player back when I was playing, if I did something wrong, I wanted to know, and I wanted to know now. Yeah, you know, and it's the same thing when you're writing these reports. You know, you want to know, you know, not what's going on now, but what the future can hold. And you're not going to get it right with every single player. It's just fact of the matter. You know, and that's where, like, the training and all that comes into play. Because you have to really understand, you know, what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Richard and Kurt, who do a great job on our training assignments. But no, genuinely, and I can definitely speak for the same thing in the Midwest. Definitely just like wholeheartedly agree with all that. But I definitely would like to comment that like the training assignments that we do now and all that kind of stuff really like emphasize those, like really emphasize the importance of all that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but like just in general, like, but being honest is just for sure the most important thing. Absolutely. You don't want to sugarcoat anything, and just you're there for improvement in general. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just another thing with scouting today, I feel like a lot of scouts hang their head on tools, and I've when I first started scouting, that was my thing. Just look at the guy's tools. Even like you look at them on B today, I think you have to have a tool to survive in pro baseball, right? On the MLB level.
Oh.
And you have to have at least one tool to like at least be a serviceable bench player, right? But I feel that scouts still just weigh tools a lot. And there's just so much more to baseball, and there's so much more to scouting than just tools. Like, yeah, this guy has incredible bat speed, but can he make adjustments at the plate? If a pitcher starts throwing breaking balls to him, is he going to able to make that adjustment and sit on a breaking ball, you know, or is he just going to swing over top of it? Like for me, a big thing with scouting, and I mentioned on our first episode, was just feel for the game. Like I want to see guys who just have that natural ability to slow the game down. And that's not really a tool. That's just something players just have. It's a talent, right? But that's a big thing for me, like as like power, hitting tool, arm fielding, whatever, that's all great, and obviously you want to see that, but it's not that's not the most important thing. There's so many guys who throw 99 and they never make it up to the majors because they have no idea how to pitch. For example, a few years ago, there was a kid who I was watching. He's a lefty who was throwing 88 in grade 11, right? Looks like he can throw in the 90s eventually, but the guy had a horrible college career. He's went from a big D1 school down to a pretty crappy D2 JUCO. And what are you doing now? And the reason was he had this fastball, but he had no idea how to pitch. He didn't know how to spot his fastball. He didn't understand counts. He couldn't read bats. And there's just more baseball than throwing cheese, you know, throwing cheddar.
Well, and then also, if you think about it, like even from the left-handed side of pitching in general, once you get to a bigger D1 school, 88 miles an hour isn't necessarily.
No, for sure.
Is not sure. What you would classify as cheese, like even from a left-handed standpoint. Like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I think he got up. I mean, on the high school level in Canada, 88 is going to get you somewhere. And especially if you're in grade 11 and you throw 88 with a lower arm slot, that's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But obviously, there's guys who throw 96, 97 from the left side.
Exactly. But,
and just on that note, you throw 88 in your province and you think you're the greatest guy in the world, I can find you 90 to 100 guys who can throw 88 in Texas, right? And for high school players especially, that's something they have to be super mindful of. You might be the hardest throwing guy in your program or in the province, but there's definitely 100 other guys who can do everything that you do. So just like scouts, just like with any job, you have to find a way to separate yourself. Same thing on the baseball field. Players and pitchers have to separate themselves however they can.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I can speak from it from BG's perspective. Like we just had our fall showcase this weekend.
Yep.
Like I can count you 5, 6, 7, 8, not 8, like 7 guys out of like the 15 pitchers we had there that hit 88. Like it's not, and none of those guys are like, a few of them we see projectability in, not to go far into that because then we get into regions that I shouldn't talk about. Yep. But in general, like, it's not special. That like velocity does matter. It's a number that's very valuable, especially when you get to the professional level. It's definitely something that is very valuable. But at the end of the day, though, when you're here and you're competing for positions like this, at the end of the day, 88 is something that's special, but at the same time, it's not. Like, you just show other tools than that, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that, I mean, that we talked about this. That's why we love Riley Cornelio, because, he throws 94 like every other kid who's going to probably be in the majors one day, but he also has a separator, which is his breaking ball. And you have to have something other than your fastball, unless it's like an insane Zach Britton fastball to find a living in pro ball, right? Absolutely. And yeah, no. So as we're just closing out our podcast, obviously the playoffs are going on. Both Pete and I picked the Dodgers to eventually win. It's not looking too great after last night's game.
Milwaukee
has something special going on out there.
They do. They have like that 2016 Cleveland Indians feel to them.
Yeah. Just a constant daily reminder. The Miami Marlins traded Lewis Brinson for Christian Yelich.
It's a constant thing in that CBBSN group chat, man.
Oh my God. It's heartbreaking. Pete, Peyton, what do you think of the playoffs so far?
Man, I love the Brewers. If they end up playing the Red Sox in the World Series, man, it's going to hurt watching them get swept in 4 games. But, you know, it's one of those things. No, it won't be a sweep. That back then, that bullpen's way too good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to honestly give an advantage right now to any team, I would actually probably give it to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
That bullpen and that pitching's on fire right now.
Yeah.
They can't miss.
Yeah.
They have the one thing that every team wants to have going into the playoffs. They're hot. They are hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have just enough offense to put some runs on the board, and then they have the bullpen arm just to piece everything together, and that's really tough. Like, you have Josh Hader coming out throwing 2-3 innings from that insane arm slot. Like, you're done.
I don't even know.
You know? Like, I'm just drawing a blank now because I've had an insanely long day, but like Jeffress, like he's been off the charts for them. Corey Knebel has been good. And even their starters, like Gio Gonzalez came in and he threw like three innings of one round ball. Wade Miley, how good has he been for the for the Brewers?
Talk like, about a resurgence. Talk about a resurgence,
you know, like man. Yeah, like Brewers are the hot team right now, and honestly, with the way the playoffs go, you just got to get hot at the right time because in baseball, that's usually how it works.
Yeah, it is. It's all about being able to carry the momentum.
For sure, man. So, what would your pick right now be for the World Series? Is it Brewers and Red Sox?
Yeah, I'd say Brewers, Red Sox, and I would probably give it to the Brewers in seven.
Seven, that's fair.
That would be a fun series.
The thing is, I love Boston to death, but I just don't think the pitching is there. You have Chris Sale, but past that, I mean, Eovaldi had a good night tonight. You know,
he had a couple good nights.
Yeah, David Price is, he's
dude,
David
what are you guys going to do with David Price?
Hopefully throw him in the bullpen because he was phenomenal out of the bullpen last year. But don't have the money.
How much is left on that contract right now, man?
Oh, dude, I don't even know. It's
an obnoxious amount. I know that.
Longer than what I'm willing to put up with.
That's insane. Yeah. Jesus.
I'm going to be honest with you, Peyton. I do have to tip my cap to Boston because I honestly didn't even think they were going to make it this far. I honestly thought that the Yankees were just going to steamroll them. But because honestly, just specifically for the reason that you just stated, that their pitching is just not that deep, really.
Yeah. You know whose pitching's not that deep either, other than their inconsistent.
Oh, shut up. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. But at least they have their offense, though. That's really what.
Yeah, that's what
it's carrying them right now.
Yeah. Oh, man. But anyways, guys, this has been fun. We should probably wrap things up right now. I'm really tired and exhausted, and I'm probably going to crash after this game. Peyton, it's been really great having you on board. We should do this again sometime.
Adley Rutschman for number one overall pick.
Oh, if anybody disagrees, I don't want to talk to them right now.
I love it.
We're going to talk some 2019 draft in the next few months.
I'm so down for that.
Please bring me back for that. My region is probably the most stacked in terms of draft prospects. I think it's only fair.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. College season starts, and we're just jumping onto the Adley Rutschman bandwagon.
Yeah,
it's already started.
It's January, and we're already there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's true. I don't want to see any more of it. Like, I know he's my guy right now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
He's my guy, too. So.
Okay, well, guys, we should definitely wrap this up right now. Pete, it's always been a blast. Peyton, thank you for joining us again. We'll see you guys next week.
Absolutely, guys. Listeners, thank you for listening. Peace and love.